Babcock, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors. George Babcock on behalf of Mr. Ricky Mutumber. I'm here today challenging his convictions under the Nebraska Implied Consent Statute and the Nebraska Permanent Breath Test Statute. And in addition to challenging the convictions, I'm challenging the validity of those statutes. With regards to the breath test statute, the U.S. Supreme Court decided the case of Birchfield versus North Dakota in June of this past year, and in that case they held that with regards to either a breath test or with regards to a blood test, if the state is going to criminalize a refusal to submit to that warrantless test, the state must be able to point to a constitutional exception to the warrant requirement. At issue in Birchfield were the search incident to arrest doctrine, and in Birchfield the court decided that the search incident to arrest doctrine is not applicable to the blood test because the blood test is deemed too intrusive, and therefore that exception is inapplicable. Nebraska's implied consent statute criminalizes a refusal to submit to a warrantless blood draw as a search incident to arrest, and it's our contention that facially, therefore, it is not a valid enactment.
Counsel?
Yes.
Since Birchfield only deals with searches incident to an arrest, under both, and I may mispronounce the names, but I think it's the California case, Schmerber?
Schmerber, yes.
Yeah, and the Missouri case.
And Miller.
They both say that you could have exigent circumstance exception and have a warrantless blood draw. So, but that's a case-by-case analysis. But still, my point is that if there is an exception that does allow for a warrantless blood draw, then doesn't that defeat your facial challenge?
I don't believe it does, because if that's the case, then as the U.S. Supreme Court noted in the City of Los Angeles versus Patel, you could never mount a facial challenge to a statute that violates the Fourth Amendment, because in all instances, a Fourth Amendment challenge would fall if there were exigent circumstances or if there was a warrant, as an example, that justified the search.
Okay, well, what about if you had an officer actually got a warrant, but a particular suspected drunk driver still refuses the blood test? Couldn't they still be charged with refusal under the statute, even with a warrant?
I don't believe that the statute is designed that way and intended that way. The statute actually authorizes the criminalization not based upon obtaining the warrant, but based upon the refusal within the circumstances. If the statute was written in such a way to authorize that, I think it would be a valid enactment. But it's not written in that way. It is, it's too broad, and it is overly broad. It's a lot like Marbury versus Madison. We didn't strike the entirety of the Judiciary Act of 1789 because of the overbreadth of that statute. But I would assert that I do believe that it will nonetheless be constitutional. With regards to the preliminary breath test statute, I think that's frankly the more interesting issue in the grand scheme of things, because in Birchfield they held that a warrantless breath test was a valid search as an incident to arrest, and therefore the state could criminalize that refusal to submit to the warrantless breath test. But the preliminary breath test statute in Nebraska actually allows the officer to compel a person to submit to a warrantless breath test on penalty of criminal conviction if prior to the arrest of the individual. And so the search incident to arrest exception is not applicable to that particular search. In Prescott, State v. Prescott, this court held that the preliminary breath test statute was constitutionally valid, but it didn't really take into account the reasoning of the court in Birchfield with regards to the criminalization, and I would assert was not particularly correct with regards to its analysis under Terry, Because under Terry, Terry versus Ohio, Terry allows you to conduct a search based upon reasonable suspicion, but requires that that search be limited to weapons that are within the reach of...
Is a preliminary breath test a search?
It is a search. I believe it is, clearly. Under both Skinner and under Birchfield, the court reiterated the notion that a breath test is a search under the law, under the Fourth Amendment, and therefore I think
is it
clearly...
Is it possible it's incident to arrest?
It's not, because it's occurring during the initial detention phase of the investigatory stop. And it's the fact that if you look at the language of the statute, it's what the statute authorizes that's so troublesome. The statute authorizes the search to occur without any notion of criminal conduct. So the mere presence of alcohol in a person's body is not an indication of violation of the DUI laws. There's not a DUI exception to the Constitution. You have to have a separate exception to the Constitution that applies to that particular circumstances. So, you know, I don't think it is a search incident to arrest, and it's the language of the statute that authorizes the search.
You don't think it is. Do you have authority for that?
Well, I think the authority lies in the fact that the statute itself says that the arrest, that the person is to be arrested after they refuse. So the presumption is, on its face, it says that it occurs during the investigation.
So this is a temporal argument, that there has to be reason to arrest before administering a preliminary breath test?
No, there doesn't have to be reason to arrest. And that's the problem with the statute. The statute, let's say I'm in an automobile accident and I'm rear-ended. That is all that the statute requires on its face to force me to submit to a breath test. There doesn't have to be any reasonable suspicion that I've been drinking. That's not what the statute says.
Would a field sobriety test be a search then as well?
It could be, but that's not an issue before the court at this point in time. And
well, if we're taking this in logical steps then, if we study preliminary breath test, which is not admissible at trial,
correct,
is a search, then the next step would be a field sobriety maneuver. The observation of that would be a search in itself. Is that correct?
Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure that we can get to that. It's certainly an argument that could be raised, but unlike a breath test, the U.S. Supreme Court has not weighed in on the issue. And
they weighed in on preliminary breath tests?
They have weighed in on breath tests, and they've not differentiated.
Preliminary breath tests, which are not admissible at trial, they weighed in on that?
They have not specifically addressed preliminary breath tests, but they have addressed breath tests.
Which would be used at trial to prove guilt.
In the instance of Birchfield, yes, but in the instance of Skinner, no. In Skinner, they weren't using those for a criminal purpose, but still recognize it's the whether you're blowing in the tube and it's going into a little itty-bitty box, or you're blowing into a tube that goes into a machine, it's still a search in the sense of the Fourth Amendment, and I think the U.S. Supreme Court has clearly enunciated that on the basis of both Birchfield and Skinner.
So circling back to my question, your best authority that a preliminary breath test is a search is Birchfield?
Birchfield and Skinner, I would say. I think Skinner may be the better of the two, frankly, because Skinner does not involve, it doesn't differentiate in its analysis between a preliminary test and an evidentiary test. And in Skinner, they're not looking at using that test as evidence in a criminal action. The sole purpose for this, the preliminary breath test, is to obtain evidence, ultimately, to convict an individual of criminal conduct. And if you, it's not as though you were using this for purposes of obtaining evidence of the existence of a weapon. The weapon is in plain sight, it's the automobile. I'm at the limit of my time, I'd like to reserve.
Counsel, to get to where you want us to go, we have to reverse and overrule Prescott.
I think that is probably a fair statement, and you at least have to distinguish Prescott in the sense that Prescott was decided without regard to the issue of the criminalization of refusal in that context.
Thank you very much. Mr. Liss, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Nathan Liss, appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska.
Time permits, I will briefly address all three of the appellant's assignments of error. As far as the first issue, the constitutionality of our refusal statute, the appellant claims it's unconstitutional on its face and as applied, as set forth in our brief in light of Birchfield, we concede that our refusal statute is unconstitutional as applied in this case, given that an invalid warrantless blood test, which is unconstitutional under Birchfield, but our refusal statute is not facially unconstitutional, as this court has recently held in State v. Cornwell. As far as the appellant's assertion that our refusal statute is facially unconstitutional because it permits a blood test in any and all cases, this argument fails for two reasons. First, as this court explained in State v. Cornwell, our statute also permits breath tests, which are separate and a valid application of the statute. And second, with respect to blood tests, our statute is still valid in certain circumstances, as Justice Kelch pointed out. If you've got exigent circumstances or if you have a warrant, if a warrant is obtained and a person refuses, that's a valid application of the statute dealing with blood draws. I disagree with my colleague that our statute is limited only to warrantless cases. It's not. It would apply to warrant cases as well. So there are at least two valid applications of our statute, and it's not facially unconstitutional. As far as the second issue, the constitutionality of our PBT statute, the appellant again claims it's unconstitutional on its face and is applied. This court held otherwise in State v. Prescott and concluded that it's not unconstitutional on its face or is applied. Prescott's still good law, in our view, and is not affected by Birchfield. Birchfield dealt only with post-arrest chemical tests and did not deal with pre-arrest PBTs, which are distinguishable from post-arrest chemical tests. So Birchfield does not call Prescott into question, in our view. As far as the Baxter decision from North Dakota that the appellants pointed to in his reply brief, we acknowledge that the U.S. Supreme Court vacated and remanded the PBT conviction in that case. But this does not necessarily mean that the U.S. Supreme Court disagrees with the Baxter decision. The order in that case simply says that the matter is remanded for further consideration by Birchfield. It's not entirely clear what this means, if anything. So we maintain that Prescott's still good law at this point. No reason to depart from that decision. As far as the third and final issue regarding the admissibility of the evidence refusal trial, the appellant claims our refusal statute is unconstitutional on its face and is applied to the extent that it permits evidence of refusal at a DUI trial. We submit this court may not address this claim for two reasons. First, to set forth in the brief, I don't believe this has been assigned as error. And second, even if the appellant's assignments of error encompass this claim, I think the issue is moot or at least immaterial in light of the fact that the refusal of a chemical test conviction is going to be vacated, presumably vacated in this case. The evidence of the refusal at issue pertained only to that conviction. It had no bearing on the remaining convictions of refusal of a PBT or driving without a license. Counsel, so, in your brief, you conceded that as applied to the defendant here, the refusal to submit to a blood test is unconstitutional.
Yes.
This third claim, if the court concludes otherwise and finds that it is properly before you and still relevant, we maintain it nonetheless without merit for the reasons set forth in our brief. Anything to add to my brief on that claim, so I'll submit that matter on brief. As any questions, we would ask that you vacate the conviction for refusal to submit to a chemical test, and assuming you do so with respect to the remainder of the judgment, I guess I'll leave that up to the court. With respect to the sentences imposed, I guess I would just note that the court did do, I guess, what appears to be sort of a joint order of probation on the refusal of a chemical test and driving without a license. It did 24 months probation for both offenses with 60 days jail and an 8-year license revocation. I'm not entirely sure how you just vacate the sentence with respect to the refusal conviction. It might be easiest and cleanest to simply remand the resentencing, assuming you vacate the refusal conviction. Plus, I'm not sure that, say, the district court would have imposed that harsh of a sentence if it was only dealing with driving without a license and that refusal of a chemical test wasn't in the mix there. So it seems like resentencing would probably be appropriate here, assuming you vacate. If there are no questions, we ask. Appropriate remedy.
Yes. Counsel, before you sit down,
sure.
The chief asked a question about whether a preliminary breath test could be considered as being conducted incident to arrest. I'd like to hear your response to that question.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's our position that it need not
be done incident to arrest, that reasonable suspicion is sufficient to administer it. But yeah, I mean, it could, if you have probable cause to arrest, and in this case, I would submit that probable cause did exist at the point of time that it was required. And yeah, it would be justified as a search incident to arrest, assuming you have probable cause. And the fact that it occurs before the arrest would be immaterial, because under the search incident to arrest exception, the search can take place contemporaneous with, even before the actual arrest, so that it would be adequate. And in this case, I think that as well.
As a practical matter, the preliminary breath test is typically administered after the rest of the standardized field sobriety test, so sort of a last safety net to make sure.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes. No further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal? How many seconds? 33 seconds, Mr. Babcock.
Thank you. Just very quickly, with regards to the question relating to cases and the preliminary breath test, I'd also point to my brief, the Michigan cases, the trilogy there, where the U.S. District Court and the Appellate Court for the State of Michigan found their MIP PBT statute constitutionally invalid and recognized that it was a search under those circumstances. And then with regards to the search incident to arrest issue, it's the statute that authorizes the time is up, it looks like. I'm sorry. Thank you.
You can finish that thought if you wish.
Okay, thank you. With regards to the PBT statute and the search incident to arrest question, the statute authorizes the search to occur before the arrest takes place. If it occurs afterwards, that's not what the statute is really geared toward and intended to. It clearly is intended to allow it to occur before. And there's no requirement that an individual submits a preliminary field sobriety test. And so in that instance, this could be the sole evidence of intoxication. And again, because it doesn't require the existence of a finding of intoxication in order to administer that test based upon what the language of the statute authorizes, I would submit that it is not appropriate either as a search test or thank you.
Thank you very much, Howard.